Good morning. I call this meeting of the House Ways and Means Committee to order and note for the record that a quorum is present. And our first order of business today is approval of the minutes from Wednesday, May 8th, 2024. Vice Chair Edelson, can I get a motion?
That is my motion, Madam Chair.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, please say no.
No.
the motion prevails and the minutes have been adopted. So today we have three bills we're going to take up, and I'll just note that we are not taking up Senate File 2219 today, which was originally posted, but we're no longer going to be taking that up today. So we'll have those three bills. So we'll do House File 4746, House File 5274, and then before we take up the paid family and medical leave, I'll just make some comments about the process in that bill, and then we'll move the bill and have discussion of that bill as well too. So we'll start with House File 5746. Representative Hassan moves that House File 4746 be placed on the general register. So to your bill, Representative Hassan.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 4746 is the TNC or Uber and Lyft bill. This bill creates a new chapter of 181C for the purpose of regulating transportation network companies, or TNCs. It provides a notice and pay transparency, compensation notice, assignment notice, daily trip receipt. Minimum compensation is set on this bill at $1.27 per mile and 49 cents per minute. And then 91 cents per mile for a wheelchair accessible. There is a language about deactivation, and then private civil right of action and enforcement. Section 7 is discrimination. 8 is nothing on this chapter, prohibits collective bargaining. 9 is forced arbitration is prohibited. 10 is allows city and local government to revoke a license, and 11 is the appropriation, and I think that's the part that, you know, concerns this committee. 11 appropriates $173,000 in fiscal year 2025 from the general fund to Commissioner of Labor and Industry for the purpose of enforcement, education, and outreach, and then beginning fiscal year 2026, and then it puts that in the base on ongoing of $123,000 each year. This bill is about fairness and making sure that we can pay our drivers who drive Uber and Lyft a fair pay. It's about, you know, striking a balance between the TNCs and the drivers. And I just want to note for the record that we did this bill last year, and it was didn't make it to the final finish line, and but the silver lining on that process was that a task force was created by the governor that included the TNCs, DLI, Department of Commerce, some of the drivers, and most of the bill in front of you is the recommendations from the task force. The only thing that wasn't agreed was on what the pay rate was going to be, and then arbitration and civil right of action. And those two, arbitration and civil right of action, is very important to the drivers, and that's why it's included here. I'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Representative Hassan. Discussion to the bill.
I guess I'm going.
Oh, Representative Rare.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I always look down at my team to see if anyone else is going to go, so I guess I am. So I just have a simple question. Actually, just two simple questions. So I looked at the fiscal note and the date, and it looks like the fiscal note was available and ready for the Labor Committee, which is also a Policy and Finance Committee, to review that. I see it looks like that's been done. You had talked about a civil right of action, and it looks like it went through judiciary, so that is good. Did you make any changes to that section after going through judiciary?
Representative Hassan.
The bill has been a work in progress, and I believe the last DE amendment that we adopted in labor had a lot of change made from the TNCs, some change from the TNCs and some change from Senate, House, and other stakeholders.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I mean specifically to the section, were you changing anything about civil right of action after it left judiciary? Did it go, so was there any changes to that section?
Representative Hassan.
Madam Chair and Rep. Rarick, I don't remember exactly. This bill has been a rolling ball, and there is so many changes, but I don't remember what exact change would be if we made change on that specific section.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. All right, so we have a letter in front of us from Hospitality Minnesota, and their biggest concern is that this is not supported by Uber and Lyft, so the rideshare services. So I'm just wondering, you say, you know, it's been kind of known that there's an agreement, but how is there an agreement when Uber, Lyft don't agree?
Representative Hassan.
I did note that the language in the bill is agreed upon. The three things that there were no agreement were the civil right of action, arbitration, and the dollar amount. And the dollar amount is an agreement between the House, the Senate, and the City of Minneapolis.
Representative Rarick.
Okay. So, those that are paying those amounts don't agree. So that's an interesting way to legislate. I wouldn't choose that path, but maybe Uber and Lyft will stay around. I don't know. But thank you, Madam Chair.
Further discussion. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I know we're supposed to be just talking about just the financial side of it, and that's an important part of what we do here. But, again, I'm just very concerned that, again, we're trying to get in the middle of basically labor relations issues on the state level. We are trying to micromanage so many different things. And then what really made me want to speak is that the agreement on the price is between the House, the Senate, and the City of Minneapolis. I mean, for a minute, just think about that. The legislature, who is now putting itself in a preemption mode, is discussing and making sure that the party that we're trying to fix the problem that created the problem to begin with is party to that. That's just wrong, and I think it's something that we have to be very careful about when we try to micromanage, and the part that we're trying to micromanage is actually party to the part that we're trying to fix. Rather than having both parties involved. If you're going to have one in, you really need to have them both in. Otherwise, it's really two people ganging up on one rather than trying to negotiate. This is just a wrong way to do it. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if I'm correct to the author, you say this is an agreement between the City of Minneapolis, the House, and the Senate. I didn't hear that Uber or Lyft is on board with this. In fact, we have a letter to the contrary. And I'm just wondering, I believe I heard them say that not only would they now leave the cities of Minneapolis, but they'll now leave the entire state. Is that the most up-to-date statement that I've heard from them?
Representative Hassan.
Well, I don't know. We would have to ask Uber and Lyft. But what I want to tell you is that we have been negotiating in good faith with Uber and Lyft. Last year, Uber had $1.17 per mile and 34 cents per minute. And the latest negotiation offer we got from Uber was 68 cents, which I think, you know, our lives did not get cheaper since last year. So going back half of what they were offering last year tells me that they're also not serious about negotiation. So that's why we have this bill, this number in front of us. And we're still open to talking to Uber and Lyft. The door is not shut on that.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I agree, our life has not gotten cheaper thanks to the inflation that's ravaging our country and our state from excessive spending. But, you know, the conversation that I want to make sure that we're continuing is talking to Uber and Lyft isn't necessarily negotiating with Uber and Lyft. And I think that when you're dealing in a negotiation, and I have negotiated many, many times on many large contracts, this is the time where you have either an agreement among all players or everything blows up and falls apart. And to me, this seems as if Uber and Lyft is saying, well, if this is what you're going to try to make us do, then we have options. And the option of leaving altogether, not just now Minneapolis, but leaving altogether, seems to be where we're headed. And I am disappointed that this is what we're looking at, and that the negotiations between Minneapolis and the House and the Senate are all we're talking about. We're not actually talking about working with the rideshare providers. So I don't know what to say beyond that, but on this, given what we're looking at and in the conversation we've had, I'll be voting no.
Further discussion on the bill? Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. First of all, I think we need to recognize that the bill before us today, not this version of it, but this issue is a must-pass piece of legislation for this year. We cannot go through the uncertainty of trusting the Minneapolis City Council to do the right thing and rescind their ordinance. This is already doing damage to our tourism, traffic. It's creating regulatory uncertainty, which is already, just simply from the lack of certainty, causing economic damage, not only in the city of Minneapolis, but across the seven-county metro. So just a couple of questions for the author. And Madam Chair, I'm going to ask you, there's a lot of information being processed, a lot of information coming out. The Senate's been taking action. I know generally you don't take testimony in this committee. Would it be acceptable if we could hear from like Mr. Carlson or Mr. Reich from Lyft, just to have them give an update on where negotiations have been, and just have just so everyone is operating off the same information base?
I don't think that would be appropriate, because then I think we would also give time for the drivers and other people that are involved with the bill, and so we typically don't. And so I think you could address your questions to the bill author, and she will do her best to answer them and continue to have those conversations. And you could certainly reach out to those folks offline as well, too. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. Madam Chair, and to the author, so in the current version of the bill, are TNC drivers defined as independent contractors?
Representative Hassan.
Madam Chair and Lead Garofalo, they are not.
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, Representative Hassan, are they defined as employees?
Representative Hassan.
Madam Chair and Lead Garofalo, they're not.
Okay, well, Madam Chair, Representative
Garofalo.
Representative Hassan, what are they?
Representative Hassan.
Well, if you care to go into details on this, I will tell you where you can find what they are. On Section 8 of the bill, page 15.9 talks about how we define. They're not employees, and they're not independent contractors either.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Hassan. So in law, we have tests that apply certain rights for both the employee and the employer when they're an employee. Likewise, when it comes to a self-employed individual who's an independent contractor. So for these individuals who are drivers who are neither independent contractors nor employees, what other statutes would they be bound by and regulated by outside of this bill?
Representative Hassan.
Madam Chair, Lead Garofalo, this independent contractor and not employees conversation is an ongoing conversation. We're not the only ones that are faced with this. TNC's drivers are just, stuck in this limbo of in between not employees, not independent contractors, what they are. And I believe that there is a misclassification bill that's moving around that is supposed to hopefully help with that confusion. But the language that we have in here says that they're not employees.
Yeah. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, and again, this is I recognize that you've already, this bill has changed a lot since its introduction and from last year. You're continuing to work on it. I believe the author knows that in order for this to happen, it's going to need bipartisan support, and I believe that you and others are doing that. Obviously, the bill is not there right now, but it is must-pass legislation. The next thing I want to talk about is the enforcement mechanisms in this. Should this bill in its version become law, who is responsible for enforcing the guidance that is in this bill?
Representative Hassan.
Madam Chair, DLI.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hassan, would they be the exclusive enforcer of this?
Representative Hassan.
Madam Chair, no, but I believe that if we look at the enforcement section, I believe also the Attorney General has enforcement on this.
Yeah.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hassan, yes, of course, the Attorney General always has enforcement. I'm wondering if the Senate has passed language that has given this direction that, would, of course, the Attorney General always has it, but this would be focused on Dolly. Is that something that people have talked with you about? Is there, I noticed there's no amendment today. Is that something that, can you give us an update on the House's position on that matter?
Representative Hassan.
Madam Chair, I can't keep up with the Senate because I don't know what they're doing. I only know what we're doing in the House, and the language before you gives power to DLI and the Attorney General, and I don't know what the Senate language is, but whenever we get it, I'll let you know.
Oh, Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to be clear, so under the current version of the bill, though, the City of Minneapolis could also be, would be an enforcing agency as well. Is that correct?
Representative Hassan.
There is nothing in here that says the City of Minneapolis lead Garofalo.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I'm switching gears to my final point, and that is the overall issue of compensation. And I know you, as the chief author of the bill, you've read the ride-sharing report. I'm sure there's components of it that you agree with and components that you disagree with in terms of the assumptions. There's the, just for everyone's knowledge, they break up the driver's time into three categories, P1, P2, and P3. And I can defer to the author to explain the study. If, I mean, I know you're knowledgeable about it, but just if we're looking at just P3 time, drivers are currently making over $52 an hour. If we include P2 and P3, they make about $35 an hour. And we are continuing to see in testimony in committee after committee stating the mistruth that drivers are not making minimum wage. Now, you haven't said this, but testifiers have come up repeatedly. We're getting letters saying that drivers are not making minimum wage. The assumptions to get to that number border on fantasy. As the author of the bill, can you clarify this for us? Are drivers who are driving Uber and Lyft right now making more than the Minneapolis minimum wage?
Representative Hassan.
Madam Chair and Lead Garofalo, the study has a lot of different components, and it breaks down before expenses. And if we take everything out and add all expenses, they are barely making a minimum wage.
Representative Garofalo.
And thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hassan, we don't need to go through the assumptions that are built into there, but just a couple of highlights for members. The study assumes that nobody ever in the state of Minnesota tips Uber rideshare drivers, that the total tip income statewide is zero. Another assumption that's built into this is that Uber and Lyft drivers, no one owns a cell phone before they become a rideshare driver. So the entire cost of the cell phone is included in that. Third assumption that's built into this is that when a driver is offered a ride, or excuse me, when a driver is offered a fare, they have the option of accepting or declining. If they decline that fare and then they wait, let's say 15, 20 minutes, get offered another fare and they accept that, this study assumes that that 15 to 20 minutes, that should be built into their compensation, right? That they should get paid the time that they are refusing work. Another faulty assumption that's built into this is the study assumes that regardless of the vehicle you own, that if you have an Uber vehicle, you are experiencing over $10,000 a year in depreciation, not maintenance, not fuel costs, not insurance. It's building into that cost that every single vehicle has $10,000 in depreciation. I have a Tesla. It's a pretty nice car. I don't have $10,000 a year in depreciation. So that those assumptions are faulty, and even with those faulty assumptions, we see that rideshare drivers are still making well in excess of minimum wage. And that's why, again, in the study we can see that the number of people who are signing up to be Uber and Lyft drivers is going up. If drivers were not making minimum wage, if they're making low wages, then we would be seeing the number of people signing up to be Uber and Lyft drivers declining. And we'd see more people applying to get jobs at, I don't know, Metro Transit for $27.59 an hour. So as we're going forward on this bill, Representative Hassan, I know that you want to pass this bill. You want a bill that works for Minnesota, that solves the problem. That's going to require bipartisan work. I know you're committed to that, but just a reinforcement to members of the body, the members of the committee, we stand here willing to help you, but you have to work with us, okay? Telling Republicans that we what we're going to be voting for as part of a compromise is not a compromise. If we need to get out a thesaurus so people understand what the word agreement means, we can do that too. But right now, the bill in its current form does not have bipartisan support. It fails the test of keeping rideshare in Minnesota. I look forward to working with the author. Our side of the aisle looks forward to working with you on solving this problem. But today we'll be voting no on this. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Lead Garofalo. Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And these questions, my quick questions are from nonpartisan staff. You had the bill author, and thank you, Representative Hassan, for bringing the bill. You had mentioned a section of the bill that defines the relationship, and what I heard was that they're not defined as employee or independent contractor. So what section was that? Could you reference that again? And if nonpartisan could actually walk me through that language.
Representative Kreisha, I'll go. So Representative Hassan, I think she had said Section 8 of the bill. Is that correct? Lines 15.9 through 15.12?
Yes, Madam Chair.
You want, and Representative Kreisha, you would like House nonpartisan to read that to you?
Yes, and just for the record, what I thought I heard in line of questioning was that the drivers are not classified as a employee, nor are they classified as an independent contractor. So based on this language, is that, according to nonpartisan research, would they read that the same? I'll just ask them to corroborate that. How do they read it?
I will turn to Mr. Sullivan and to try his best to answer that.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Representative Kreisha, the staff expert from my office wasn't able to be here this morning. She's double booked. So I don't have expertise in this area. I would just say that on 15.11, the language says that this bill, the language contained in House File 4746, must not be construed to alter whether a TNC is an employer of a TNC driver or whether a TNC driver is an employee. So I can't provide more clarification on, you know, what that means in context of labor law without expertise in that area. I would just note that the language attempts to specify that this does not change the factors that would be considered in determining whether a TNC driver is an employee or not.
Representative Kreisha.
So thank you. So Mr. Sullivan, so as we read that just word for word, so it may not be construed to alter whether they are an employer of the TNC or whether the driver is an employee. What does that mean?
Mr. Sullivan.
Madam Chair and Representative Kreisha, you know, I defer to the author on her intent behind this language, but to me it means that the language contained in this bill does not by itself determine whether the TNC driver is an employee or not.
I'll go to Representative Hassan. Do you want to offer anything more on that?
Madam Chair, Rep. Kreisha, as I said earlier, this language says that they're not employees. Drivers are not employees of Uber and Lyft. That's all the language says.
Okay. Representative Kreisha.
Madam Chair and Mr. Sullivan, or to the author of the bill, so they will be something, they will receive some type of compensation. How will they file their taxes?
Representative Sun, and I do think we might now have the House research staff person that has worked on this bill. she's coming in right at the, hopefully, we can get you caught up here if that's helpful. You can just take a minute,
answer
take
the
a breath.
Question.
So the questions are around the definition of employee that Representative Kreisha is asking about, which was the Section 8 of the bill.
And I can back up a bit.
Yeah. Do you want to, and maybe just kind of like synthesize, it sounds like you're kind of trying to get at something around a definition of employee. So if you want to maybe try to just synthesize it so she can take a crack at it. Representative Kreisha.
Yeah. So thank you, Madam Chair. And so first of all, I'll let you introduce you and get your name so I can make sure I get the name right.
Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thanks, Madam Chair and Representative. My name is Martha James from House Research.
Representative Kreisha.
Thank you. And so I'm really not trying, I'm just trying to understand this. So I'm really not trying to get to anything or I have a an island that I'm trying to boat us to. We were told that in Section 8, 15.9 through 15.12, and the exact language was 15.11, that it must not be construed to alter whether the TNC is an employer or TNC driver, whether the TNC driver is an employee. What does that mean?
We'll go to Ms. James, and I'd say you had probably a pretty full discussion in labor. This would be fully within the jurisdiction of labor, and I'm imagining this was vetted there, but I will give some leeway. Ms. James.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative, so I think that what that means is that nothing in this bill changes the existing law. So as Representative Hassan said, there's been some discussion about the status of Uber and Lyft drivers, and this bill doesn't change that status.
Representative Crescia.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll do two more questions, and thank you for the latitude. So in trying to understand this, what would be your best guess on how, when the compensation is doled out at the end of the year, how are the taxes filed by the individual who drives the vehicle?
Representative Hassan.
Madam Chair and Rep. Crescia, I don't think that we're changing anything. Right now, I believe, and I don't want to speak for TNC drivers because I'm not a TNC driver or neither an expert on that. Right now, they file their taxes as self-employee independent contractors. But because there's a lot of conversation about independent contractors and what the TNC drivers are supposed to be, we are not trying to mess with that. That's why we put a language that doesn't change anything, the current status. But there's still a debate about that, an ongoing debate on that.
So. Representative Crescia.
So the intent is not to change anything, but something already exists. And if I'm hearing correctly, and I'm not trying to put words, you're not trying to get into that debate whether they're an employee or an independent contractor. You're trying to leave that where it is. If I understand.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. And I'll leave it there. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further discussion? Seeing none, we'll go to Representative Hassan. Last word on your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for the discussion. Lead Garofalo, I invite you to come to the table, you and any member of the Republican Party who want to be part of this conversation and to help us pass a bill that all of us can rally behind. And I sincerely mean that. So that offer is at the table. This bill is about fairness. It's about protecting workers. Minnesota has a long history of protecting workers. Someone said drivers are well paid. If they are well paid, they wouldn't be here. Every single time we're hearing this bill, they wouldn't come to us and they wouldn't spend hours and hours. They could be making money right now, but they're sitting in this room trying to fix a problem that exists. I also want to, offer the TNC, leadership to also come to the table with a serious offer, not an insulting offer like 68 cents. They were offering $1.17 last year, and today they're offering $0.68 to the mile, which I don't really, like I said earlier, our lives did not get cheaper. They got more expensive. So this bill is about striking a balance between TNC and drivers. It's about working with drivers. It's about standing up against corporate greed. It's a good bill. Please support. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hassan.
Madam Chair, I'd request a roll call on the bill. Thank you.
A roll call on the bill. Roll call has been requested. There will be a roll call. So Representative Hassan renews her motion that House File 4746 be placed on the General Register, and the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Olson.
Aye.
Olson, aye. Vice Chair Edelson.
Aye.
Edelson, aye. Lead Garofalo.
No.
Garofalo, no. Representative Akam.
Aye.
Akam, aye. Representative Egbaje is excused. Representative Becker Finn.
Aye.
Becker Finn, aye. Representative Freiberg. Representative Gomez is excused. Representative Hassan.
Aye.
Hassan, aye. Representative Heintzman is excused. Representative Hornstein.
Aye.
Hornstein, aye. Representative Howard.
Aye.
Howard, aye. Representative Cleburne.
Cleburne, aye.
Cleburne, aye. Representative Crescia.
No.
Crescia, no. Representative Liebling is excused. Representative Lilly.
Aye.
Lilly, aye. Representative Moeller.
Aye.
Moeller, aye. Representative Nash.
Nash, no.
Nash, no. Representative Knorr?
Knorr, aye.
Knorr, aye. Representative Novotny?
No.
Novotny, no. Representative Pawlowski is excused. Representative Petersburg?
No.
Petersburg, no. Representative Farr?
Farr, no.
Farr, no. Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Rarick?
No.
Rarick, no. Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, no.
Schumacher, no. Representative Scott?
No.
Scott, no. Representative Joachim?
Aye.
Joachim, aye. And Representative Hornstein is, or Hornstein's here, sorry.
Aye.
Madam Chair, there are 13 ayes and 9 nays.
There being 13 ayes and 9 nays, the motion prevails and House File 4746 has been placed on the General Register. Thank you, Representative Hassan. So the next bill for on the calendar for on the agenda for today is House File 5274. And I move that House File 5274 be placed on the General Register. And I also move the DE3 amendment as Chair Stevenson, Representative Stevenson makes his way. And we'll have Representative Stevenson, if you welcome to the committee. Please walk through your DE3 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. So the DE3 amendment merges the bill before you with House File 2000, the bill to legalize sports betting in Minnesota. It makes only 3 changes to House File 2000's language, all of which are relatively innocuous. The first is it aligns the appropriations article with the updated fiscal note to reflect new input from the agencies. Those changes were relatively modest. The second thing is it adds an enactment date, and actually I guess this would be a change to the bill that's came into the committee, the horse racing bill. It adds an effective date to that to make it effective the date following final enactment. The third change relates to the fee structure in sports betting. So prior to this committee, all of the licenses were renewable on a 3-year cycle. So what I did to kind of even things out was I made those licenses renewable annually, but then decreased the fee amount by 2/3. So over the 3-year horizon, the companies are paying the same amount. They're just paying it annually instead of on a 3-year basis. And that just makes the spreadsheet a lot more predictable and even rather than seeing these large surges in fee revenue every 3 years. But other than that, it's just the original language of House File, or the amended language of House File 2000 being incorporated into the horse racing bill.
Great. Thank you, Representative Stevenson. And I'll note we have the fiscal note. We also have a tracking document that walks along with the DE3 as well for members' reference. So discussion to the DE3. Seeing none, all those in favor? We have an amendment to the DE3. My apologies. So Representative Farr, would you like to move the A8 amendment?
Yes, thanks, Madam Chair. The A8 very simply adds Haas and Pfeffer to the list of social skills card games that are allowed to be played in the state.
Discussion to the bill. It sounds like there's something below the surface, but there really isn't, is there, Representative
there,
Farr?
There is not.
So Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Farr. For anyone who's wondering, and Representative Farr will correct me if I get this wrong, Haas and Pfeffer is euchre without the jokers.
With
the jokers. Okay, so it's euchre with the jokers. This is a fine amendment. We heard this as a bill in the Commerce Committee, and I'd let Representative Farr know that if the sports betting bill moved, that I would be comfortable with him adding this as an amendment. The stakeholders have broadly are fine with it, so I would encourage a yes vote on the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Stevens. Discussion to the bill, the A8 amendment. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Farr, so you were modifying a section of law. I'm just wondering if you could give us a little guidance on what some of these games are. Scat, sheep's head, smear, whist. What are those games?
Representative Farr.
They're all card games, Representative Garofalo. I have played both Pfeffer, Haas and Pfeffer, and Euchre. And depending on where you're at geographically in southern Minnesota, some communities you play Euchre, some you play Pfeffer.
All right. Well,
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, I think in light of the fact that this is Representative Farr's reelection bill, we should all support it.
All those in favor of the A8 amendment, please say aye. Aye. All those opposed, please say no.
No.
The motion prevails and the A8 amendment has been adopted. So to the DE3 as amended, any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no.
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 The DE3 as amended has been adopted. So to the bill as amended, Representative Stevenson, anything more before member discussion?
Nothing further.
Member discussion on the House File 5274 as amended. Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Representative Stevenson, I'm just wondering if you could talk a little bit about the effect on charitable gaming and kind of the step down of the tax.
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Rarick. So the bill contemplates a series of tax cuts on charitable gaming. Those are on your tracking spreadsheet online. 20. It begins when we start to see sports betting tax revenue, which you can see on line 3, really begins in fiscal 26. And if you look back down to line 20, you can see nearly $7 million in tax cuts that year, followed by $27 million total, that's aggregate, in 27. And then it's not on the tracking sheet because it's outside the budget window, but there's an additional tax cut in fiscal 28 that is estimated value of $40 million, which is, you know, consistent in sort of ratio to the sports betting tax amounts for that that are projected that year, even though that is outside the budget window, so it's not reflected on the spreadsheet.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Right, so I have a revenue report, or a report from revenue dated April 29th. I'm not sure if it's in our packet, but I was provided with that, and so I was just... It's interesting to me the language of that and the language in the bill that it's contingent as opposed to certainty.
Oh.
And if you could just speak to the difference between the contingency, a little, just expand a little bit more, versus what possibly the charitable gaming organizations are thinking, that it's more of a certainty than a contingency.
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Rarick, thank you for highlighting it. This was language that was added in the tax committee. In the contingency, or you might think of it as kind of a trigger language, says that these tax cuts go into place only if there's sufficient sports betting revenue to fund the tax cut. But as you can see from the revenue projections and the tracking spreadsheet, the amount of revenue that's projected far exceeds the amount of the tax cut. So you would have to have a pretty dramatic shortfall in sports betting tax revenue for that trigger to be not pulled.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So can you talk about the preference and so sort of like the order of the payouts? And so in your tracking sheet, you've got a multiple of things that are being paid out of that revenue. And where does that, so line 20, I'm looking at line 20, where does that rank as far as when they get paid out? Is that like first, so as soon as the revenue is assumed and collected? It's actually an assumption, I believe, isn't it? It's kind of projection and assumption of the that year's, not an actual. So let me ask that question first. So is this actual revenues coming in, or is this the assumption of what's coming in?
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Rarick, I'm not sure I understand the distinction. So the revenue projection, you know, estimates based on experience in other states how much tax revenue we will collect upon the legalization of sports betting, and that's the numbers you see on the tracking spreadsheet. Based on that analysis, we've had several rounds with the Department of Revenue as those assumptions have been refined, and the bill language has changed multiple times with regards to what is being taxed.
Mm-hmm.
With specific regard to like promotional bets and other things, we've been kind of widening the base there in order to make sure that we have the revenue we need to support the program. So I'm not sure I understand that. I hope that answers your question, but those numbers are reflective of what we think the tax revenue will be based on the experience in other states.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you. So it's contingent upon the estimate of revenue coming in. But what happens if it fails to meet that estimate?
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Rarick, if the trigger is not pulled, then the tax cuts don't happen. But again, it isn't that the revenue has to hit the amount that's projected. It has to exceed the amount, the value of the tax cut, right? So, and right now, the value, the revenue that's projected is almost double the value of the tax cut. So you would have to see a very dramatic shortfall in the amount of sports betting tax revenue that was projected for the trigger to not be pulled, which if you look at other states, and this is one of the things that we were discussing, as I mentioned, is the revenue estimate has kind of been looked at and examined time and time again. In other states that have legalized sports betting, and in every, literally every other state, when you look at what was estimated by those states' revenue departments or whatever they are called in those states versus what actually happened, it exceeded what was estimated. And so I think it's very unlikely, bordering on extremely unlikely, that there's any risk that the trigger won't be pulled because, again, it's so much lower than what is projected, and the actual experience is that revenues exceed what is projected.
Thank you. And just final question, just to kind of go back to the question I tried to start with, but I had to go to a different question to make it make sense. So in the expenditures, you've got quite a few different expenditures. You've got public safety, Department of Revenue, Human Services, Attorney General, Racing Commission, so on, so on, so on. So you have these expenses coming out of that revenue. The amount that's going to the charities, that all the other expenses, does that matter at all to the charities, or if they meet that trigger, it happens, and none of the other expenses matter? Is that how this is laid out?
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Rarick, yes. Okay. If the trigger is satisfied, the tax cuts happen, irrespective of the other expenditures.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Farr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Chair Stevenson, many conversations on the topic, and talked about just the charitable piece. I'm glad you're doing what you're doing there. Can you just walk through what we're doing for the tracks in the bill?
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Farr. And it's worth noting that I know that a lot of members are still having discussions about this, but what the bill does is it provides a fixed amount of $625,000 to the Racing Commission. It would go into an economic development fund there, and all of that money would be used to supplement purses at the state's two tracks. The money would be distributed between the two tracks consistent with already existing state law that divides up money between the two tracks based on the type of racing that occurs.
Representative Farr.
Right, thank you. So we've had the conversation before and won't dwell on it, but that's not enough, because if those businesses are gone, it doesn't matter. And I just think that's not, we're not taking care of them. And so struggle to support this or won't support it until we can get that piece figured out. Thank you.
Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Stevens, going through this fiscal note that was dropped on us real late, 68-page fiscal note. But a couple things really jumped out at me. All the different lines that are hiring additional FTEs for the enforcement and the investigation and the prosecution. If we look at the BCA's hiring people and revenue and gambling, how many more just enforcement? How many licensed FTEs are we going to be hiring?
I'll go to Representative Stevenson. I think the fiscal note is from 4/25/24, so I think members have had some time to look at it, and the tracking sheet, though, does reflect the DE, so that would be, but Representative Stevenson.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo, I think when I look at the FTE provision on page 2 of the fiscal note, I do see that we have a total of 40 FTEs in fiscal 25, and then almost 49 in fiscal 26 and just over 53 in fiscal 27. Again, I don't think that's on top of one another. I think that's the total. I do want to note that the provision for on the Gambling Control Board, which is a three-quarters position, that's relative to a provision that's been removed from the bill. So I wouldn't expect, it's obviously not a big deal to reduce by less than one fiscal note, but I did just want to note that wouldn't happen.
Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Stevenson, and I say that because we reference to the struggles that we've seen the cannabis enforcement commission or whatever it's called, going through hiring people. This is a very large block of people that we're going to have to hire before you even get up and take in your first cent of revenue from this sports gambling. So how much are we going to spend before we ever make a dime?
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Novotny, if you look at the tracking spreadsheet, you can see that in the first year, there's approximately $8 million of cost to the Department of Public Safety, some cost to the Attorney General of $700,000, and then a couple other agencies have some smaller costs. But that's all offset. While you're correct that no tax revenue comes in until fiscal 26, there's substantial licensing revenue in fiscal 25 that more than offsets the cost of those additional FTEs and expenditures in the public safety department. So your question is, how much do we spend before we get a dime? In the context of a fiscal year, the answer is we actually make more money than we spend in that first year because of the licensing revenue.
Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Stevens, you're assuming, and it tied into the line that Representative Rarick had, that everything goes the way you plan it's going to go. And that leads into the question that you had. You were talking about the attorneys and things. I noticed that on line 29, it lists the attorney cost of $163 an hour for attorneys from the Attorney General office. And I realize it's not this bill, but that's an important number that we were trying to get the other day on the floor, what the Attorney General's office cost. And I noticed that's substantially cheaper than $850 an hour. We're going to have three FTEs in the Attorney General's office added. It looks like we're creating felony level crimes, yet the Department of Corrections note assumes that there'll be zero impact. We're going to be handling hundreds of millions of dollars going back and forth. We're going to have a black market that we're going to be creating with sports betting. Very complex investigations that we're going to be doing, and we're assuming there'll be zero felony prosecutions resulting in prison sentences.
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Novotny. Well, first, I agree with you. The Attorney General provides excellent service at a very competitive rate for the people of Minnesota. I think that's why it's been good that we've invested substantially in the Attorney General's office over the last few years. I think that the Department of Corrections analysis sort of stands for itself. You say that we'll be creating a black market. I would say the opposite, that we'll be transitioning people from the black market into a legitimate marketplace. The black market exists right now. It is unlawful to engage in sports betting in Minnesota today, and it happens every single day in extreme amounts. It's extremely easy to bet illegally on sports betting in Minnesota. People do it all the time, and if you talk to anyone who works in problem gaming, they will tell you exactly that.
Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chair. But zero? We're going to have zero felony crimes resulting from hundreds, if not billions of dollars over time being exchanged, I think is just beyond the pale unless we assume they're being prosecuted in Hennepin County. Thank you, Chair.
Further discussion? Grafflin, as you might have some comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Stevenson. First of all, before I begin my questions and comments, let me just, I state the obvious here that on this side of the aisle, there's a diversity of opinion on the overall issue of sports gambling, regardless. Thank you. Just thought I'd have a gin and tonic this early morning here. No, it's just an ice water.
Just a member on his way out.
You have another one?
Yeah. I derailed that train of thought quickly. Let's start over. So, yeah, Madam Chair and members, there's a diversity of opinion in both parties on this, the overall issue of sports gambling. I don't want anyone to interpret my comments as being representative of every Republican or even most Republicans or some Republicans. Representative Stevens, I know you've put a lot of work into this. This is a contentious issue. I'm not going to highlight every portion of the bill that has concerns because I know that those conversations for making this a bipartisan, bicameral bill that can get signed into law, there's a lot of changes that need to take place, and those will have to take place in order for that to happen. So I'm not going to, again, focus on all those items. A couple of things I did want to highlight is right now it's important to understand the structure of this bill, that we have a very high fee structure. The Representative Stevenson's change to this made it better, but we could take a look at that improving it going forward. I recognize that those dollars are allocated, but it's something to keep an eye on. Also, our tax structure, the 20% is on the upper end of taxes in terms of withholding. A couple of things I wanted to ask you about is, first of all, on page 70, the historical horse racing. And if you could just provide some, just get members up to speed on why this provision is currently in this bill.
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Garofalo. So what happened was just over a month ago, I believe, the Racing Commission held what was billed as an informational hearing on the idea of placing historical horse racing machines at the state's two tracks, 500 machines at each track. There was an analysis done by the Alcohol Gambling Enforcement Division of the Department of Public Safety that clarified that these machines are unlawful gambling devices under Minnesota state law, that they are in all ways similar to a slot machine and not within the scope of pari-mutuel horse racing. Despite that analysis and despite the fact that this was billed as an informational hearing, the Racing Commission at the end of that hearing, and despite the fact that they were advised by their executive director that they were not in compliance with Minnesota law related both to the gambling letter and also the consultation requirements, the Racing Commission sort of sus sponte decided to approve installation of those machines at the tracks. This language undoes that decision and clarifies that there will not be these historical horse racing themed slot machines at the state's two tracks. It is my belief that if we're going to have expanded gambling at the tracks, that should happen at the legislative level and not by an unelected commission.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Stevenson. If your opinion is correct and your opinion is that historic horse racing in all its forms is already illegal, why do you need to change the law?
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Garofalo. One, to make clear that it's the legislature and not the Racing Commission that makes these decisions. Two, because the Racing Commission's decision is effective May 21st, and I don't want the tracks to be investing in these machines, you know, as many people have said, the tracks are under great financial strain, and horse racing is under great financial strain, and I don't want them investing resources in something that's unlawful due to the actions of an unelected commission that went far beyond its statutory authority. We should clarify the law and settle this at the legislature.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Stevenson, and again, there's many provisions of this bill that will need to change. I appreciate the outreach you've had with me on this. And with other members, recognizing that gambling bills are complicated, it's a regulated industry. The reality is that if we expand gambling into allowing sports gambling, something that I want a safe, I want a regulated environment. The current situation gives us all the problems of sports gambling with none of the benefits. We should regulate it. We should legalize it. And I recognize that these, again, there are many changes that need to be made to it. On this matter, I think you and I disagree. I think that there are forms of historic horse racing that are acceptable, that can be part of the solution. I think there are forms of historic horse racing that would not apply to Minnesota. I think there's a spectrum of these items. Certainly the ones that would classify on the higher end as slot machines, those concerns are justified. For other ones, and again, we're talking about, it's a pari-mutuel pool. It's not a random number generator. It is historic horse racing. It is a pari-mutuel wager. I think that's something that should be on the table as one of the things we can do to help bridge the gap and help achieve a bipartisan bicameral agreement. My final point is that, you know, and again, I recognize that the Uber bill that we're talking about earlier, that's a must-pass piece of legislation. Obviously, I have a different perspective on this than some members. I would consider this piece of legislation absolutely must pass. But as we're going forward, it's just really important for members to understand the conversations that the leadership of the four caucuses are going to be having about the next week of session and what role the minority party will be having, what level of collaboration and access we're given, and input on legislation on Uber, bonding, sports gambling, and other items that require it. And so those conversations are going to play a really big role in what we're able to do or not do on sports gambling. But again, Representative Stevenson, I want to thank you. I know you put a lot of time and energy into this this bill. It's something that I've cared about for 6 years. I recognize that my perspective on this is probably a little less rational because I'm leaving this year. It still blows me away that we haven't taken care of this, but sometimes these things just take a little bit longer. So I recognize that members will be, in both parties have a diversity of opinion on this, but I'm committed to continuing working with you along in the confines that our the leadership of our caucus set up for us. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Seeing no further discussion, I will go to Chair Stevenson for final word on your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, appreciate the good discussion, and I wholeheartedly agree with Representative Garofalo that this is going to have to be a collaboration. That's the approach I've had for the bill so far and will continue to have, and happy to talk to any member at any time about it.
Thank you, Representative Stevenson. So I renew my motion that House File 5274, as amended, be placed on the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, please say no.
No.
The motion prevails, and House File 5274, as amended, has been placed on the General Register. So thank you. So our last bill on the calendar for today is House File 5363, Representative Frazier, the Minnesota Paid Family Leave. And I am just going to say that I just want to explain a little bit about process because I understand there is some frustration from the minority. So I just want to walk through a little bit before we take up the bill. So yesterday we noticed, we knew, and I had been in communication with Lee Groffel about our intent for this to be the last hearing of the Ways and Means Committee and to take up the last bills that were coming through the committee and do it today so that members could get home. We wouldn't be coming back next week. That said, it's the legislature. There's always, of course, things that could pop up, and we're a committee that can meet at any time. But the intent was to get through all the bills that we knew we needed to move today. And so we knew we were going to do paid family and medical leave. At 6 p.m. yesterday, we posted the DE amendment that Representative Frazier provided. Later in the evening, there was a technical change, a one-line sunset date change that needed to be made. And I will fully accept it was my error that I didn't talk to Representative Frederick in House Research about having that drafted as a page and line amendment. Instead, it got posted as a DE amendment. So there was confusion amongst members that there was a 52-page DE dropped at 11 p.m. There was not. I mean, there was physically that, but what it was a one-sentence change to a sunset that happened. So the amendment that was posted at 6 p.m. that was noticed at that point is the exact same substance that was then changed. And again, I will fully own it should have just been a line item amendment made that didn't get made. So the substance of what it was, and Representative Frazier is going to walk through those changes that were made in the DE amendment. And it was done in that way, and he will get to it. And I also want to note that nothing in the DE amendment changes the fiscal note. So within the purview of this committee, the opportunity for the fiscal note that you all had a chance to review that's been around since has been around, and I hope members have had a chance to review because that's really the substance of this committee. And I imagine our minority members have a lot of thoughts on the fiscal note, which would be very appropriate for the committee. And if you would like to, take time on the process, you certainly can. And I have also offered to the minority that if they felt they still wanted to take a break, have Representative Frazier walk through the bill, we could take a recess for you because, again, I understand it was confusing. But, again, the substance of what was posted at 6 p.m. was the same as what the substance that was posted later in the evening. But if that was all confusing to our minority, they're welcome to take a break, meet with House Research if that's helpful, meet amongst themselves. But that is what happened, and I get there's a lot going on at this place, but I have also been in the minority here, and I have been on committees too. When I have not, and I do my very best to always keep our minority well informed, and tried to do my best to keep up with that last night as well. And so it was never the intent to hide the ball in any way, shape, or form. Again, the substance of the fiscal note, which is the part that is the purview of this committee, continues to be the same and has been posted for a long time. So I will leave it in the minority's hands if, once we walk through the bill, if they still would like to take a recess, they certainly can. And we can come back then and take action on the bill with the hope that this will be our last Ways and Means hearing. So I just want to be crystal clear so everybody's clear about what we're doing. Okay, so with that, I move that House File 5363 be placed on the General Register, and I also move the DE1 amendment. So to your bill or to the amendment, Representative Frazier, and feel free to comment. We've been talking a lot in the last 12 hours. So
thank you.
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. And I know I'm the last thing standing between you all in a Mother's Day weekend. So to those that will be hanging out with their spouses, wives, partners, enjoy the weekend. I will try to get through this as quickly as possible. Also, depending on how many questions I get, so we can all get to our weekends and enjoy it with family and friends. I think the chair laid out quite a bit in terms of process and how we got to that DE amendment from last night. That DE amendment, truly what it did was line things up with the Senate version of this bill with the hopes that we will be aligned as we have passage off the floor to avoid having to go into conference committee with the short timeline that we have to finish up here. I'll talk through the amendments that were added. I'll talk quickly to that DE amendment. The couple of things that were brought in were actually amendments that were proposed by my Republican colleagues over in the Senate side. Senator Nelson requested to have the actuary study done every year as opposed to every other year. Senator Rassman requested that DE must notify all employers from which the applicant is taking leave, either in writing or electronically, and not more than 5 business days after a claim for benefits has been filed by an employee or a former employee as provided. So that I wanted to make sure that I had those things in the that I captured those things from the Senate side so that we're lined up. And then just in general, what this bill does, it's largely technical changes with the caveat of the one issue that's a bigger issue, which is addressing and explicitly saying that the first week will be paid, which is you all seen addressed in the DE, and that's what a lot of the conversation has been around. And that's where the sunset clause came into play to sunset the way to address the first week being paid is a PTO buy-down that will sunset after 12 months of the program being in place. But the fiscal note does reflect what the cost will be with the program in place with the first week paid. So, again, transparency totally. Didn't want to hide the ball. I know that may be part of this conversation, but I want you to know we are absolutely trying to make sure that you can see exactly what it is that we're trying to do here. Some of the other changes that are being done this year based on feedback from the recommendations from the agency is rate setting, changes to the funding formula to require regular actuary analysis for premium rate setting. This will allow for more consistent premium rates over time. The appeals process, it clarifies the appeals process to ensure timely decisions and consistency. It also clarifies the appeals process under the private plans. And then for private plans, it ensures that the interaction between the state and private plans is understood by all parties, which is important. And then the small business program, I received some feedback around that, but those provisions actually simplify administration while continuing to support small businesses. And then the retroactive pay creates flexibility to backdate applications for more than 1 week if the individual was unable to file in a timely manner due to an incapacitation or similar situation of the sort. And then there's many technical clarifications, a variety of language clarifications to ensure consistent interpretation of the law. There is staff here if we need to get into particular details on standby to answer any questions. And with that, Madam Chair, I will stand for questions. Remember, the only thing that stands between you and getting on the road is getting home to your family.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. Discussion to the amendment.
So, Madam Chair.
Lead Garofalo.
So I just would ask your indulgence if we could just recess for a little bit. I want Republican members just to want to group and talk about this because, again, the late hour of this, where things are at. I don't know why, and this bill's been around all session, I don't know why it took until last week for us to do this, but we would like an opportunity just to group on that, regroup, and then I'll reach out to you.
Lead Garofalo, could you get, we can be in touch, but just for my members so I can give some guidance about how much time would you want for your recess? I mean, we can...
3 days?
3 days.
let's go with...
Should we say an hour to start?
No, why don't you just go with noon, and then I'll okay. update. But there's a very well could go longer than that, and I will update you via the phone.
Okay, so we stand in recess till the call of the chair.
Let's go to my office.
I call the committee back to order, and I am going to lay over House File 5363 for further action, and the plan will be to come back next Monday morning before session, so please keep your ears on, and with no further business, we are adjourned.